All right, Nick, thanks for coming by.
Anytime.
We are ready to start the Tim Gilbert episode of this podcast.
The Danko Jones, the official Danko Jones podcast.
Now, Tim Gilbert is a comedian based out of Toronto and a friend of yours.
Yes, a good friend of mine. A comedic peer, one of the most talented Toronto comedians working today.
You guys have collaborated before.
We've made videos before.
And you collaborated on pilot episodes?
Sort of, yeah. And actually, he was in a web series I was in called Moderation Town, the second season, or whatever you would call it, the second iteration of it. And he was, he played my nemesis, Kevin. And we have, if you guys want to have a laugh, you really should watch just this one clip called The Wind and the Sun. And you'll get a sense of our dynamic, which involves, at times, insulting each other hurtfully. Also, Hello What is a really good example of not just Tim. Tim's amazing in this video called Hello What. I'm in it. Chris Locke and Tom Henry are a big part of it, too. But I would also say check out the video Hello What.
And Tim has actually been on, in a roundabout way, this podcast. It wasn't really this podcast. It was your aborted Nick Flanagan podcast called Help Me.
Aborted is such a strong word. But yes, I did not.
And it was a strong episode, Nick.
There was a
Tim and I tag teamed against you. And basically what it was is giving advice.
It was a handicap match.
It was. Giving advice to Nick. That was your podcast premise, right?
Right. But then it kind of quickly devolved into this sort of like harsh critique of everything about the way I live. Or at least that was how I viewed it. Anyway, we get into it in the podcast, so I don't want to offer any spoilers now.
Right, exactly. So we'll touch on that.
Tim also has an album called Please Help Me, I'm Very Sick. With a great cover. Bandcamp. Only on Bandcamp.
Tim
and you
Gilbert,
can get it basically for free if you want.
TimGilbert.bandcamp.com and
you can
theoretically get it for free. When that option is available to me, I always pay.
Well, yeah, like you have the option to pay and you should pay. He put his life into this. People don't understand, man. That first comedy album, it's like I was saying in the podcast.
Many times.
10 to 15 years.
Yeah. And to segue into something else about Tim, he does write for, or he wrote for, a Dave Foley vehicle.
Sitcom. The second season of it. And I think the end of the first. Spun Out.
Is the name of the show,
yeah.
Starring Dave Foley up here in Canada. Dave Foley, of course, of Kids in the Hall and News Radio fame.
Yeah.
Tim Gilbert was on the writing staff.
Yeah. Along with my friends Sarah Hennessy, Amanda Brooke Perrin, Graham Kay, lots of good young comedic talent writing in the room for that. Some of them have gone on to perform in the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival, including Tim Gilbert, who will be recording. They will be showing his taping he did in July on television later.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know.
Yes.
And, you know, for anybody who doesn't know Tim and may not really get a sense of his comedy by listening to this episode, you know, Tim, when you see him, he's really clean cut.
Tiny.
Yeah, very, very...
very little. About 5'1".
Well, he's a really clean cut guy, but when you hear him or when you read his tweets or listen to his comedy, he's super dirty. Like his image kind of betrays a lot of his comedy
material.
He's
so polite when you meet him.
Yeah.
He's just trying to have a good time because of the fire that is in his brain.
Yeah, it's dirty. It's mean-spirited in the best way possible.
It's cruel.
It's definitely cruel.
Sadistic in the best way possible.
Yeah, insensitive.
Genocidal in the best way possible.
But that's what I really like about
diuretic in
Tim's
the best
comedy.
Way possible.
That's the part I like.
No,
about
he
it.
Does have. He goes so overboard in terms of his anger sometimes that it does.
It's you
really
can't
great.
Take it seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there will be people who do, and I don't think we even touched upon that while we talked to him. Mm-hmm. But anyways, here's the Tim Gilbert episode, and here we go. Tim, Nick, and myself.
Yeah. Over to you, Danko.
No, over to you, Nick. You seem to be the one who wants to have the last word or last soundbite.
You should have
or
the last
word. Noise.
You should have the last one. Okay.
I always say, all right, here we go with the podcast. Let's start now. And that's what you do. You do that all the time. If you would go back into the episodes, I can hear you doing that. And I didn't really catch on until, like, that's how slow I am, until, like, the third time it happened. Okay, so here we go. Tim Gilbert episode starting now.
Yeah. The Daniel Jones podcast is the best around. If Flanagan is Daniel's go out tell him for free. I'm so glad I do sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down. Yo, motherfuckers. You like Kiss? I love fucking Kiss. Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley are the fucking shiznit. Man, and I also love my punk rock, too. You know, that fucking Henry Rollins is a badass motherfucker. You know who else is a bad motherfucker? Danko Jones. That OG lay down that pimped out podcast like no other. He loves his Kiss and Black Flag. I mean, I love that fucking Danko Jones podcast. And if you don't like that Danko Jones podcast, go fuck yourself.
The Danko Jones podcast is simply superb, splendidly fine, wonderfully wild, very divine.
We're here with Tim Gilbert.
Hi!
This is kind of your official first appearance on the podcast.
So happy to be here. Thank you for having me. It is an honor.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Nick.
I say official because you have been here before and we have the mics have been recording. But for a different reason entirely.
You've smelled these mics before.
Yeah. That old familiar smell.
Leather.
Whether people know it or not, Tim Gilbert and I participated in an aborted podcast of Nick Flanagan's. Never made it onto SoundCloud or iTunes. It was called Help Me, right?
Libsyn didn't make it there. I think it was called Please Help Me or
Help Please Help Me.
Teach Me Things or something.
And short-lived.
One try. Pilot attempt.
And it was just basically me and Tim probably taking out all our frustrations that we've accumulated.
Over the years of knowing Nick and having to deal with him.
And it was a great way to get it off my chest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Everybody was much nicer to me in the days after that. I felt like
it was never purging. Aired.
No, it was. I was very traumatic to do. I didn't realize it would be, and then it was.
You
very
asked
traumatic.
For the help.
Yeah, what was it? What you wanted to do a podcast where people like told you how to fix your life or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess we tried.
We tried, but you started to deflect in the middle of the podcast, Nick. I remember that. Trying to change the subject, but the subject can't be changed because it's about you.
We can't just like. Do the podcast again.
Are we going to do it? I have a feeling
we're going to do it all over again. Slip back into old habits real quick.
Well, we're here for Tim today. Tim is the special guest
celebrating
of the
life and death.
Oh no!
Of Tim Gilbert.
You guys are really good friends.
Oh yeah.
So I'm the odd man out.
No,
Jack
come on.
Tripper of this.
No.
Of this group.
No.
So
no.
What are you?
I'm a comedian. I live in Toronto. I do stand up, and I. Have done some TV stuff, like writing and a little bit of being on TV, and that's it.
You have an album out.
Yeah, I do. I do have an
album. Is it called an album when it's available only digitally?
I don't know.
It's a very
good
question.
There should be a new title.
Cyber album?
Comedians do something where once they've seen that someone else exists or does something, then they all do it. So now, because the ease of the digital age, it's literally like everyone is doing an album recording. Of course, Tim should be doing an album recording. Of course,
you're basically saying that. Yeah, Tim's doing what everyone else is doing.
No, not at all. You did it good. You had a good.
It's
cover
a good
idea.
Record. Good record.
You had a
good
cover idea. You were like, I'm gonna make it free. Like you had a whole scheme with it. You thought it through deeply, clearly.
Yeah, you know? Come on. I wouldn't say everybody's...
What's the title of it?
It's called Please Help Me, I Am Very Sick.
You put this album out last year.
That's right.
When's your next one?
I don't know, but it's not going to be for a while.
That's the problem, is it takes so long to develop this stuff, much less think it's, like, finished. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so, I just recorded for a second album, so that's 5 years between the 10th. You know, the 2010, now it's 2015.
And in between, I must give you credit, Nick, in between those 5 years, there have been attempts to do the follow-up, but it just didn't for one reason or another.
Even this one, I love it, but I just still think that there's so much more room, you know, with some of the stuff on it. The only thing about that is that, like, well, it's an album, so you're not necessarily retiring what you're doing, not necessarily, because people won't have heard it necessarily. It's not on television.
Tim,
it's
do you do the same jokes that you do on the record still?
Some of them, yeah, but there are some jokes that I have never done since the taping.
What jokes?
I don't know. Like,
Tim has really good jokes for the listener.
I know that there are some that I haven't done since. And there are some that I've done a lot, many times afterwards, that are sort of like jazz standards that I can always go to that I know will work. And like a certain chunk of four jokes in a row is usually a good amount of time that people will usually respond to positively.
Do you ever go, guys, those last four jokes for my album, please help me, I'm very sick.
No, I of course don't do that.
It's interesting how it's different for bands. Bands, everybody wants to hear that song that they've heard a million times before, but a joke has pretty much just a one pop thing. Has anybody ever come up to you and gone, yay, I got the record, dude. And why are you retreading this material?
Oh, no, nobody said that.
I think that's an internal fear as much as it's a reality.
I guess maybe somebody has approached me and said, I was, you know, like I saw the show and I have the record or the album and said, oh, there was a lot of stuff from the album that you did tonight. And I'm like, well, yeah, well, it takes a while to come up with anything that's worth saying twice, you know?
What was the response and the feedback, or did you gain any ground with it?
Yeah, most of the response I've gotten has been great.
You got a lot Split Cider.
Yeah, I got a lot of cool press, like Split Cider and Vice, and our friend Nathan Fielder was lucky enough to give me a very nice tweet about it, which helped a lot. And there were a few people, like, just, you know, Twitter weirdos, like, that say they hate me and they listen to it and stuff like that, but...
You have people who hate you?
You've gotten
some hate tweets?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Really? Oh, well, Nathan, I mean, has so many followers, so if that got it started, then you would have a bunch of people.
Yeah, so many people got it after that.
That's
the
double-edged
sword
of when things open up. As soon as you realize there's more than 1,000 people, like, then suddenly it comes to this thing where people are just like, oh, I hate this person. You're like, oh,
yeah.
That's...
yeah, I mean, that's... You got to get used to it very quickly.
And absolutely,
get thicker skin overnight. When you realize that it's a good sign, though. It means that you're breaking out of your comfort zone and it's getting wider and wider. Mm-hmm. So actually, bad tweets, hate tweets are actually a good sign, I think.
I think
probably a good point.
And I kind of made fun of them, and all of them were, you know, they all seem kind of stupid.
How did you make fun of them?
Well, there was one guy that had some negative tweet towards me that was something like, how is this funny? He just wants to kill every teenager or something. I have a joke about how I don't like teenagers.
Yeah, a joke,
and,
quote unquote.
It made the guy look dumb, you know? It kind of...
Usually they end up looking pretty stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want to like just set the record straight on how you feel about teens?
No, not really. I think I'd like to leave it ambiguous.
I think I just said it there.
Yeah.
I'm cool with teens.
It was just something I really wanted to do, and I did it, and I'm happy with the way it turned out. I'm so happy that there are people that like it, and that's pretty much it.
I like it.
I think the comedy thing is being like, I think it's a great record, too. Comedy is like rap, right? I think where the first record is after a really, really, really long time, then you do your first album and it's like a hit, and then the second one, like, then it's so hard to like correctly generate more material after that.
Well, I mean, if you want to get into that discussion, rap music is all about that first pop, and that's it.
The
turnover
and
the attention span to keep with a rapper, it's fleeting. I mean,
it's changed a bit now.
Rock music fans are a little more loyal.
You like Miley Cyrus?
I don't have an opinion on her either way. I'll be honest with you.
You like Billy Ray? Cyrus. No. What about Doc? What's your stance on the Doc?
You're just trying to get me to shit talk now that I've outed myself
as a shit talk Doc towards Billy Ray Cyrus for an hour.
What are you talking about, Doc?
That was his TV show when he played a doctor, Billy Ray.
Yeah, it was filmed in Toronto.
I didn't even know that. Really?
Oh, yeah, it was weird. He was like a long haired
like country style doctor
in a big city.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Doc. He took it that far. You got to admire him, though. Now, in hindsight, you got to admire him. He took one song, and he's like the chubby checker of our generation.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't hate him. I like him.
No, you really upped his stature there. in with the gods.
But I'm not about. I'll do shit talk behind closed doors, but when we're on the mics and we're on the record, I keep it nice.
Oh, this is good. This leads into something about Tim, which is that you have shit talked publicly in your life, haven't you?
You're great on Twitter. You're hilarious. Thanks. I mean, you're live tweeting.
Oh, is sometimes, you know, I just like to have a good time.
I would say that you're the way that you make fun of comedians. I have no idea if it's super inside or not when you do it, but it's always really funny, and people, and it seems like comedians take it very no one thinks you're talking about them.
Good.
They always like,
because my fear is that everybody thinks it's about them.
Well, it is about them, but
it's not about everybody. But when I started doing stand-up, I made fun of comedy a lot and made fun of comedians a lot, and like,
yeah, which is one way in a weird way, doing comedy, I think.
Yeah. And then Eddie Brill, remember him?
Yes.
Who used to book, it Letterman?
Yeah.
He saw me when I was like years ago, a long time ago, and I was doing a lot of stuff, making fun of comedy and stuff, and he told me not to do it. It was too inside. So I try not to do too much of that stuff.
Okay. Like, it kind of makes me think that you should do it.
Right?
Yeah.
I still do. It's, you know, it's like, even if it's
isn't
too
that
inside.
What Andy Kindler? Yeah, Andy Kindler.
He's on Letterman all the time.
Yeah.
That's his whole thing now.
Mind you, I don't know if Letterman would be having two guys who are making fun of comedy on.
Oh, what he forgot to tell you is we already got Kindler.
Yeah. Oh.
That's what he forgot to add at the end.
Well, great.
But your style of making fun of comedy is more like, can't really explain it. It's more about the, like, futility of people's attempts, you know, like the fumbling idiocy of a certain level of comedy, I feel, rather than necessarily like Andy Kindler goes after like hacks and like, you know, the big guns. I think that you're more in charge of taking people down, like, back to reality, who are just like lunatics almost.
You know? Well, good. Somebody's got to keep these people in check.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wrote an open mic joke, too, is because it was just like I couldn't handle it anymore. Just everyone is scary who does comedy.
When I first saw you, Tim, I had no idea who you were. You were just on the bill, and I went to see Nick, and you walked on stage. You know, I was struck by the fact of what you were saying, and yet you did come off like a normal guy, like looking like a normal guy. And it was like kind of in a stealth kind of way. And then you start doing your material. And I think that's a lot of, you know, your charm as a comedian is you come in and then suddenly it's like, wow, this guy has some crazy thoughts.
Good. Yeah. I think, well, that's nice. Thank you. You know, I try. At the end of the day, I just want to be a nice, normal guy and be friends with everybody. You know,
is that
you
hard?
Wouldn't know that from your tweeting.
I know.
Well, I mean, if it was, I mean, even your profile pic doesn't give it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you might look like an insane person.
Yeah, you're wild. You're a bunch of combinations of things.
You sitting in front of me wouldn't. I can't match the tweets from the person who made them on Twitter.
Picture him drunk. Right.
But he's not drunk. He's not drunk because it's...
Sometimes I am.
Yeah, I think
it is. Okay.
Especially like any award show, stuff like that. Like any of that kind of stuff, I for sure am. Yeah.
Have you ever been flagged on Twitter? Has anybody reported you as inappropriate?
I don't think so. I actually did just get flagged on Instagram.
Oh, really?
Because I put...
Lenny Kravitz's dick?
Oh, I wish. Somebody else's dick. We have, like, nude male playing cards, and for whatever reason, I just took a picture of this guy that had an erect dick.
Good.
With, a cowboy hat on the end of it, and I just put that on Instagram, and then next time I checked, they took it down, and I got a warning.
Well, you got a fan base, bro.
Yeah, you're so right.
And that fan base does not want to be grossed out all the time in the morning. Was it the morning?
No, it was late at night.
What about Lenny Kravitz's dick? I feel like we can talk about that for a second. He sure. had a cock ring.
Okay, sure.
Right? He have a cock ring,
It was
right?
at yeah. Gronelund in Stockholm, and it's a stage we've played a few twice, and we put out an album on Spotify from that stage.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I know that stage very well, and it's a great venue to play, and it's very historic.
Why?
Everyone from Little Richard to Bob Marley, Thin Lizzy,
wow.
Runaways,
wow.
ABBA, Motorhead, Lady Gaga have all played it.
Lenny Kravitz.
And Lenny Kravitz has now stolen everyone's thunder.
Right.
With his
precious old dick.
But it's good. It's a good idea for a rock singer to wear a cock ring the whole time. That was all I thought when I saw that picture.
That's what. Why is that a good idea?
Because it keeps you in the zone.
What zone?
The zone where you got a half chub.
So wait a minute. He had a cock ring.
It was really hard to tell.
It looks like he's wearing a silver metal cock ring.
That's
right?
What it looked like exactly. Yeah.
It would have been okay if it was 1985. Nobody would really even know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people. It would just be an amazing story that some friend of a friend would tell you.
Passed
at a party.
Down. Yeah.
That'd be it.
There's a photo that exists of his dick. Well, I want to tell a story.
Yeah,
then.
Exactly.
I just want to reiterate again what a pleasure and an honor it is to be here and doing this podcast.
Thanks, Tim.
I grew up in Port Stanley, Ontario, and going to London, Ontario was like a very big deal. And I eventually moved to London and went to college there. But, so we used to go to Call the Office all the time.
Oh, I know it well.
Yeah, being kids, we're like 14, 15, 16, getting into like punk and hardcore, going to these shows at Call the Office was like, that was our number one thing. That was like the greatest thing we could possibly do. And I've seen you a ton of times at Call the Office.
Wow.
So the fact that I'm even here doing this, it's a real cool thing for me.
Oh,
so thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, what shows? Were we opening or playing with any other bands?
Well, I remember most of them. All I remember in my head is you on stage and it was completely packed. And, like, you're covered in sweat from head to toe, and there's, like, a red light right in your face, and you look like a demon. Like, it was awesome. But it was, like, you know, like, it was just so cool.
Oh,
one time,
thanks.
We saw you with Andrew WK at the Phoenix in London.
Oh, I remember that show.
And
yeah.
We got there. I remember we were 18. And we got to the venue, and they said, "Only if you're 19, like you've got to be 19 to be on the floor." We got stuck up in this balcony thing, and we had no idea.
That was like a dance club. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was awful.
Oh,
yeah,
that's brutal.
Yeah. My friend Rob, and we were so pissed. Like we couldn't believe it. We felt like we were ripped off. I think Rob had like a skate tool or something in his pocket and just started punching holes in the walls. And it was like a nice dance club with like leather couches and shit. And we were furious. And then somebody went and talked to them and they let us down. So we felt bad about the whole punching thing. But holy shit, that was an incredible show. And then I remember meeting you afterwards.
Oh, no.
Because you and Andrew WK were hanging around signing stuff for everybody.
Oh, here we go.
So, no, this is good.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't have anything, but...
Idiot a cock.
I gave you my student card, my high school student card, and you signed the back of it, and you were like, "Don't give this dude detention."
Oh, that's what I wrote.
Yeah. So there you go. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's
nice. That's cool. Yeah, I remember that. And you know, what's funny is we just played at the Wacken Open Air in Germany on Saturday.
Wow.
And a few of the guys from Andrew's band and Entourage. We're at the festival in various bands. So there was a guy from who was working with Cannibal Corpse.
Cool, one of my favorites.
He was on that tour, and so I hadn't seen him since that tour. And then a couple of guys I missed in Obituary. A lot of Andrew's band on that tour were from Florida through Donald Tardy in Obituary, the drummer of Obituary. He assembled this whole group of guys from the Florida death metal scene. Cool. And so over the years, whenever we bump into some guys, it's one, the sound man went on to now be the sound man for Slipknot. The backline guitar tech, one of Andrew's on that tour, is now with Slipknot too. Obituary. It's an interesting, when I look back on that tour, I'm like, wow, these dudes, you know, not that they weren't doing anything before, but it's interesting. It was our way in into the Florida scene, and
that's cool.
I've known Donald now for 13 years now.
Wow.
We missed each other because his shuttle didn't get to the festival in time. But you know, we still email each other all the time. Obituary are still doing it. So that comes from that tour.
That's awesome.
It was a fun tour to do.
It's so weird to remember that's his kind of the way he got ascended. Partly was that he was this like thrashing, like he was a metalhead. Mm-hmm. For real,
yeah.
You know, he would trade tapes or something with my friend Katie, you know, and then he produced music that was sort of like The Suite or something.
Yeah.
You know, it was very
melodic,
different,
yeah,
than what you might expect. And
but his whole backing band, whether anybody knew it or not, were all from the Florida death metal scene. So it was an interest, and our crew and his backing band all got along really, really well. By the end of the tour, we were all good friends. It's lasted since that tour. And I remember that show because it was the one show we played in London that wasn't at Call the Office.
Right, yeah.
And Call the Office is the one club in the world where we've played the most.
Yeah.
We've had the most shows. And you know Tony mm-hmm. Lima. He put out one of my, the only banter 7-inch called Having Fun with Danko Jones on Stage. It's off of Tony Lima, who books Call the Office. He has a label called Yeah Right. Has he put your stuff out?
No, I've never put anything out with Tony. I've never anything, but he's like a good example of
Public Animal he put out.
Yeah, he's just band. Loyal in his own, you know, promoters are funny that way. Like if you had a period where you were playing with them a lot and doing cool shows, they kind of never tend to forget it if they're decent people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Tony's definitely on that list.
Yeah, definitely. So that's nice. I didn't know it comes from there.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're wearing an Abyss shirt.
Oh, yeah.
From Toronto.
Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on, they're on tour
with Junior
right now.
As well. Junior.
Yeah, and Rob Reed, everybody. You love Abyss.
Yeah,
you told
I do.
Me that before.
Yeah, I saw them at Smiling Buddha and I had the greatest goddamn time.
I do like that band as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dave got...
who is your friend?
One of my oldest, nearest and dearest is Dave, who sang in Rammer and Abyss and other bands. And he was recently on Facebook. Some guy was like, most obnoxious. Did you see that?
Oh, the burrito thing or something?
Stop screen capping it. But yeah, someone's like, most obnoxious metal for a man definitely goes to Dave from Abyss, Column of Heaven. He at one show, he took a bite of my burrito and like threw beer on me and, you know, like slapped something out of my hand probably. And it just is really funny to me that.
Well, you know, you get every year there's new people coming to shows who don't maybe not know that kind of stuff happens at underground level shows. I mean, you know, they watch television and then they go to a club.
Picture that happening at an arena show where like the singer's going,
you
like
know,
this,
yeah,
he like slaps a $10 beer. Yeah. Some one of his
what
fans.
What the fuck are you doing?
So but for some reason, the
maybe
idea is,
that's that
we're
guy.
We're all in a crummy place here, guys.
Yeah. I find that, you know, you think you know the rules of how things are in the music scene, and then you realize there's a whole bunch of new members who need to be schooled or maybe will be numerous enough to change how you've gotten used to this thing.
And so that's exactly like the comedy scene as well. There's always new people coming in.
New faces.
Oh, my God.
And also,
is it annoying? You say it like it's annoying.
Well, sometimes it kind of is annoying. Yeah.
You know how long it takes to get any good at comedy? So long. And then, so in other words, if you're not a nice person going into it at the outset, it's horrible having you around because you're bad and also not nice.
Well, I find, like, you know, I find a lot of the older comedians are have horrible been living people. With that for a horrible long time. Yeah.
Those I feel like there's a generation of comedians that are like the molested and abused children of a previous generation, and they're trying to pass their hurt on to, like, the following generation.
Well, know? Now a lot of the focus has been the sadness and the toughness that comes along with being the lone stand-up.
Yeah, but
sometimes how about the shows that worked? How about the shows that were amazing, or have there ever been, where you, like, come home or you go back to your hotel room or wherever you go at the end of the night and you're just like, that was the oh, fucking yeah. best.
I don't want to, you know, yeah. I don't want to come across like I've never had a good show. There are nights when you feel like the king of the world, you know? And it's like, oh my God, that was so great. I'm so glad everything went well. And people are nice to you afterwards.
Yeah.
People are making eye contact with you afterwards. Yeah. And that's great. And that happens. But then there are also times when it goes awful and people don't make eye contact with you and you stand alone as they walk out of the room, not looking at you, and you know they all hate you.
Or
you
even
know?
Worse, a lot of times if you open up for somebody, then accidentally at the end of the night you're like talking to that person or something, and then it's the end of the show and everyone's passing you, and then you have to deal with, like, anytime there's two people who've been on the same show and they're next to each other, and then the crowd is there, it's horrible. Because suddenly it becomes, they're inclined to tell the person who they preferred that they preferred them.
Oh, yeah. And oh, that isn't
kind
fun.
Kind of give a platitude or awkwardly insult the
other
person.
You were good, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You were
yeah,
good, too.
Absolutely. All that kind of shit. That's one of the, I mean, not that I'm moving it right back into the bad part.
How does your ego not just get distorted?
That's why people are such freaks, you know? Because it's like you're just getting this, you're trying to find this drug that's like an entire crowd, like, treating you like Dionysus. golden god.
Right.
For one moment. You know, but 9 times out of 10, you're kind of, especially in a city, you know, in certain environments where there's a lot of comedy to witness, people are just like, yawn, or you interpret their lack of complete response as a failure. You know, that's the other thing, is you're really trying to not just elicit smiles or you know, like, approval. You're actually trying to get, like, this verbal thing, like a noise. You're trying to make people laugh, which is, like, insane, you know?
And there's also times, too, when you can just tell that the crowd are a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
Just, like, shitheads, and you know it. And you can just kind of be like, oh, well, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Just, you know?
Yeah.
Clips. Did you guys not try to do a series of TV shows?
Yeah, we tried it. So yeah. Oh,
oh my God. Yeah. That was actually worse than any, in some ways, that was more difficult than any, like,
what was
stand-up
it called?
Comedy
Psychic
sets.
Brothers.
Psychic Brothers.
Such a
Here's,
fun idea.
Let me pitch this to you, okay?
All right.
Nick and I are idiot brothers that don't look too similar. We inherit a psychic shop from our dead uncle, and we have to run it. It's very supernatural and violent, and a lot of crazy stuff happens. Ghosts, ghouls, goblins,
goats,
everything.
Demon horns.
Do you guys find out that you're actually psychic at any certain point?
One of us is. One of the brothers is like an aspiring psychic, and then the other one is sort of a grifter type.
And I've never heard of a psychic shop, so do any really
exist?
Well,
you know, like, well...
Yeah, like a psychic, like a tarot card place.
Oh, like just an occult store.
Occult store, yeah.
So, yeah, okay. Yes, yeah.
A psychic shop.
Yeah, we just
never thought of that.
You just walk into the store and they give you the bag that you were going to buy with all
maybe,
your goodies.
Maybe that's why nobody Secret wanted shoppers. To make it, is because we were describing it incorrectly all this time.
We
you know, a psychic
it,
shop.
We got it relatively far a couple of times into things, and then to a big chorus of nothing.
Yeah.
And chorus? Is that a hidden...
Yeah, chorus.
Maybe a bit.
A hidden what reference
no,
to what?
Your reference.
Chorus, the
Oh, Chorus, no.
Comedy?
Chorus did not even... I think we actually did try to do something with them.
Yeah, Corus was the first place we went. Oh my god, I remember those meetings with Corus. Oh, let's not get into it.
The Canadian, it's crazy. But it would be fun to do something again in the future.
Yeah, Nick and I produce a weekly series of shows at Comedy Bar. Tim has the
best show at Last Sabbath going.
Oh, thanks.
It's called Swipe. What's it called?
The show is called Human Life is Worthless. And it's the first Thursday of every month. And it's myself and Marty Tops, who is a friend of ours, who is maybe the funniest person in the world right now. He's like a genius. If you're listening to this, Google Marty Tops. Listen to his albums. It's incredible.
Yeah, Tap Out.
So he has albums.
Yeah, he made. He's like, he can do. He
about Tap Out.
He's so funny and he can do music like crazy. He did an entire album about the brand Tap Out.
Yeah.
And then the next one he did was like a live concept album of him trying to win his wife back.
Right, yeah.
And it's. Okay. Just look up Marty Tops. But we host this show. It's the first Thursday of every month as of right now. And
in Toronto.
In Toronto at Comedy Bar, Thursday nights, 9:30. And it's
stand-ups?
Stand-up, yeah.
Yeah,
but
hang on, yeah.
We host it together. He is himself. I dress up like, I got this old Crypt Keeper costume from Tales from the Crypt for my birthday a couple years ago. Because that's something I would want. And so I put the Crypt Keeper costume on, and I am Swipey the Troll. That's my name.
Okay.
And I swipe at people. That's where that comes from. But I hate humanity. I hate humans. I hate everybody. So we kind of do it like a fake stand-up competition.
And you have like a pitch shifter on your voice as
well. Oh, yeah.
Your
and I've got like a voice modulator thing to make me sound like a monster. And I hate all... So it's like a fake competition. He loves all the comedians and I hate them.
Right.
So after everybody goes up, he says something nice about them and I say something as mean as I can think
of. And Swipey is there because he's basically kept... by Marty Top.
Oh yeah, he has my... There's a bit of a backstory. Yeah, there's a backstory. He's got my ruby, so he controls me.
Right.
And he forces me to host this show with him. But I hate
funny.
Him.
Do you want to do an album as Swipey the Troll?
No, I don't think I do, no.
Swipey the Troll is a very reactive character, I would say. Yeah. Like, he's mostly... Like, the judging of comedians is... you get to say the things that you might not be allowed to say.
Yeah, oh yeah. Context. And I think people, like, the show's been selling out. People seem to really like it, and I love doing it. And people, I think, are responding because if you go to a stand-up show and you see a comedian you don't like and you think negative thoughts in your head about them, I come out and say it out loud in front of everybody. And I think people seem to really like that.
What did you say about vegan? I believe it was...
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember Jews being allowed on this show or something.
That's just how, well, you know.
Which was nice. You didn't...
You didn't cut up his actual.
No, I'm not. I don't. You know, it's all for material. Fun, and I don't want to really. But
most
I have.
Of the time, it's your friends.
Have you cut a little too deep?
Probably, yeah.
Because you've never heard repercussions from.
No.
Well, the context is just so
outlandish. Well, yeah, if I, you know, I'm dressed up. I've got a rubber mask on and like a brown cloak thing. And,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I perform and you say something that I deep down inside know is the weak part about me,
right?
And you. Get there.
It's never like that, though.
No? Yeah, I'm, yeah, I don't ever want to actually hurt anybody's feelings. Nobody,
that is, like, a good point, is there's such a clear difference between, like, a funny burn, even if it's about a weakness, and, like, a cut to the bone, like, do you like me, do you not like me kind of burn, you know? And,
yeah, I don't want it to be that.
No.
It's just kind of, it's just for fun.
But that's actually...
Like, we've heard those jokes before. We've all told those jokes the first time we went on stage. Like...
Yeah, maybe kind of something like that, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But in a more gravelly voice and probably still a bit meaner than that. Right. We don't mess with the comedians during their sets or anything like that. Oh, I hate that.
I
feel like
a little before with the couch show.
Oh yeah. Well, that wasn't my fault. And then I used to have a show called Laying Down with Tim Gilbert where I would put a couch on stage and I had a blanket and a pillow and I would lay and I had a microphone and I would lay on the couch the entire time and people would just come up and do stand up beside me, and then they would go.
And did that fuck with their set? Or
some people, it really did. Yeah. Some people, you could, like, there would be people that would just, that would be normally good at a good show, would just bomb. because like it was too weird that I was right there with
so
them.
when they finish their set, are you still on the couch?
Just I never get off the couch.
It's like Eugene Levy is Perry Como, right? On
SCTV. Maybe it is. But it's but
what,
then
what
other
prompted
people
you to choose to do that? Because I always thought it was that an element came of you wanting to lie down.
Well,
actually,
it was like I'd been hosting this like these Laugh Sabbath shows for years at this point. And just kind of, for the most part, doing it like a normal old stand-up show. Mm-hmm. And I noticed myself getting very lazy with it. Like, yeah. Not, and I mean, I even still do that now. But hosting, it's hard to
you
not get so lazy. So I was like, why don't we just take this to the next level? I'm going to embrace this lazy thing, and I'm just going to lay there the entire time.
A lot of the times when you go to a stand-up show and the host is the, you just kind of get annoyed to see them again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. Hosting is like one of the
it
only
sucks.
Thing you can do with hosting is, I mean, and this goes for a lot of comedy, but hosting, you just gotta be like really quick. Like, you need to know, do yeah. comedy like once,
keep it moving,
maybe twice.
Well, we all know that know. They're established or they're veterans to have gotten this spot.
Mm-hmm. Not but everybody
all,
knows
but
that.
But we also, yeah. Yeah. But I also know that they're not gonna give up the best material in these like 1 minute
no
slivers.
No,
so
you're doing your seven off the top.
It's all
and hopefully
shit.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then by the time you've done that, you don't need to do more.
Yeah,
the,
it's
you know?
Just like, hey, let's give it up
just
for him.
Just be likable and make the crowd feel normal about being there and then introduce
yeah.
the next people.
I find sometimes if I'm hosting, I often feel like now I've painted myself as like the heel of the show. Like, right. I'm the villain on this show, and you all hate me, but I'm just going to keep this thing going because you like everybody else, you know? And I guess I'm the host, you don't like me, but here's everybody else.
Well, thanks for coming, Tim.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
This has
been
fun.
Yeah, I love it.
I always like to, whenever comedians come on the podcast, I always like to pick their brain as to, you know, what their process is and what their next step is. And, yeah, we've had a couple of times it's happened where, yeah, I wanted the album thing is something I'm fascinated with, as Nick is.
Please help me. I am very sick.
Yeah, check it out, everybody.
What's the website?
TimGilbert.bandcamp.com. If you Google Tim Gilbert, it's one of the
no
first
iTunes?
Things. No iTunes, just Bandcamp. You can have it for free if you want, if you download it. Or you can pay money, that's cool too, but you're welcome to have it for free, and if you actually download it, you get a bonus track that is, I think, like, earth-shatteringly filthy.
There we go. That's enough to entice everyone.
I think so, yeah.
Filth.
Right? Who doesn't love a bit of filth?
Everyone loves some filth.
Well, with that, let's go have lunch.
Great.
Lunch.
Thank you so much, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody.
You too, and everybody else.
When I was a kid, I had a very vivid imagination, and I used to hope that something bad would happen so that I could use it to my advantage. Par exemple, I would go into the grocery store with my parents and hope and pray to God that some psycho would come into the grocery store with a huge knife, and he'd grab this pretty girl and hold her hostage, and he'd be like, "All right, I'm gonna cut this girl's head off." And I somehow disarm the man, tackle him, save the day. People in the store pick me up and carry me out on their shoulders, and the girl and I eventually date for a little while. But even as a kid of, say, 15, I knew that that was A, not very realistic, and B, frankly, too dangerous. So that daydream of mine quickly turned into this psycho comes into the grocery store and he has a huge knife and he grabs this pretty girl and holds her hostage and he's like, "All right, I'm gonna cut this girl's head off unless someone here can answer these Rage Against the Machine trivia questions." Which is something that I could easily do.